Hello, and welcome to our program, Prevention, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Toni Morrell, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the June 2022 issue of Prevention Magazine here on OWL Radio. Listeners, we left it off with natural benefits of cilantro. And now we're going to find out about how to use it as gentle liquid soap. This cleanser is mild on skin. Blend together 1 cup cilantro leaves, stems removed, and 2 tablespoons honey. Stir in 2 tablespoons grain flour, such as oat, brown rice, or quinoa, not wheat, and 2 teaspoons fragrance-free or unscented liquid soap, such as Castile soap. Store in the fridge in a lidded glass jar. It keeps for about 2 to 3 weeks. Herbaceous dressing. Add a splash of this antioxidant-rich dressing to salad, pasta, or vegetables. Or use it to marinate chicken or fish. Blend together 2 cups olive oil, 4 cloves peeled garlic, 2 to 3 tablespoons fresh lime juice, 1 to 2 teaspoons spicy whole grain mustard, and 1 to 1.5 cups cilantro leaves, stems removed. Store excess in lidded glass jar in the fridge for up to 2 months. Prevention Magazine, June 2022. Natural fixes. What your mouth says about your health. By Andrew Weil, MD. Your breath, gums, and tongue can reveal surprising things about what's happening in your body. Your mouth is an excellent barometer for what's happening throughout your body. Your oral health can have an impact on other aspects of your well-being because the mouth leads into both the digestive tract and the respiratory tract, making it a prime spot for harmful and sometimes helpful germs to enter. Here are 3 areas of your mouth to consider. If any of the info describes something you're experiencing, schedule a visit with your physician or dentist to investigate further. 1. Breath. Not so fresh breath isn't always the result of nibbling garlic bread or adding onions to your salad. Technically known as halitosis, chronic bad breath is often a sign of poor oral hygiene or tobacco use, but it could also stem from problems beyond the mouth. These include sinus issues, post-nasal drip, acid reflux, dry mouth, and mouth infections. 2. Your gums should be pink and firm with no signs of recession or bleeding. Gums that bleed or are red or swollen can signal gingivitis, gum inflammation, or peritonitis, gum disease. If your teeth seem to be getting bigger or longer, that can be a sign that your gums are receding as a result of gum disease. A growing body of research suggests that gum disease is associated with an increased risk of seemingly unrelated conditions, including cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Some scientists think the inflammation associated with gum disease may contribute to those conditions. That said, pale gums can also be a problem. This can suggest anemia, or, if they are white and painful, leukoplakia, a potentially precancerous condition. 3. Tongue. Interestingly, the tongue is considered an important indicator of health in traditional Chinese medicine, otherwise known as TCM, and a tongue examination is almost always part of a physical exam in that system. Practitioners of TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, believe the size, shape, color, and texture of the tongue are related to various organ systems throughout the body. However, Western medicine also pays some attention to the tongue. For instance, a dry tongue and mouth can be more common with aging. but can also be a symptom of Sjögren's syndrome, an autoimmune disorder that affects salivary glands. Medications, including some antidepressants, allergy drugs, and pain relievers can also trigger dry mouth. Canker sores on the tongue or inside the mouth are usually caused by factors such as stress, sensitivity to acidic foods like citrus fruits and tomatoes, and minor injuries. However, they can sometimes be warning signs of certain conditions, including celiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, autoimmunity, and HIV/AIDS. Talk to your doctor because additional testing is needed to confirm a diagnosis. Protect Your Skin from Cancer by Victoria Kirby. Summer is just about upon us. Well, considering this is the June 2022 issue of Prevention Magazine, it was upon us, listeners. However, when summer comes around, it brings with it lots of opportunities to be exposed to the sun and its dangers. That makes a terrific time to book your annual skin cancer screening. New cases of invasive melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer, have gone up 31% since 2012. Melanoma tends to be diagnosed at a later stage in people of color, which often means a worse prognosis, says Elizabeth Hale, MD, Senior Vice President of the Skin Cancer Foundation and a Clinical Associate Professor of Dermatology at New York University Langone Medical Center. For people of color, melanoma often appears on areas of the body that don't get much sun exposure, so any skin changes may go unnoticed for some time. This contributes to an alarming disparity in melanoma 5-year survival rates. 93% for non-Hispanic white individuals compared with just 71% for African Americans. Research shows that race and ethnicity play a role in where people may be more likely to develop melanoma too. So knowing your risk areas can be key to early detection. Here's the latest information from the Skin Cancer Foundation for those of a variety of races. Everyone. An annual skin cancer screening is the standard. But if any of your first degree relatives have had melanoma, you should be checked twice a year, as we know there's a genetic component to the disease, explains Dr. Hale. She adds that anyone who used indoor tanning beds before age 35 has a 75% higher risk of developing melanoma, no matter how many years have passed since they last were in one. It's not like smoking, where for every year since you quit, your risk of lung cancer decreases, she says. The cell mutations caused by tanning beds don't improve over time. To identify worrisome moles, you'll want to refer to the A, B, C, D, E system, which stands for A, asymmetry, B, border, C, color, D, diameter, and E, evolving, according to the American Academy of Dermatology. A change in these characteristics can help differentiate benign moles from cancerous ones. If you notice spots on your skin that are different from others, or spots that are changing, itching, or bleeding, the American Academy of Dermatology recommends making an appointment with a dermatologist. African Americans. Acral lentiginous melanoma, a less common type of melanoma that typically occurs on the palms, soles, and nail beds, occurs disproportionately more in people with dark skin, says Dr. Hale. One theory is that because people with melanin-rich skin lack melanin on their palms and soles, and melanin offers some protection against UV-induced damage, those areas are more vulnerable. This type of melanoma may look like a bruise or a pigmentation splotch, so people may not recognize it as a red flag. Hispanics. Melanoma incidence has risen 20% among Hispanics over the past two decades. In females, it shows up most often on the legs and hips, while in men, it's most common on the trunk. Hispanic men have a significantly higher rate of later stage, more advanced melanoma tumors than Hispanic women do. The signs can be subtle, but it's most often identified by a funky looking mole that changes over time. Warning signs include changes in mole size, shape, or color. AAPI individuals. Over 60% of melanoma cases in Asian American and Pacific Islander people occur on areas of skin with limited sun exposure, palms, soles, and nail beds. Research shows that these people have poor outcomes compared to non-Hispanic white individuals, primarily because melanoma tends to be detected in them at a later, more aggressive stage. Advocate for yourself if you have any concerns about these or other areas of your skin. Caucasians. Melanoma is more prevalent among non-Hispanic white people, with the most common form showing up predominantly on men's torsos, women's legs, and the upper back for both genders. Other risk areas for less common types of melanoma are the arms, scalp, face, and ears. Prevention Magazine, June 2022. The five fitness moves everyone should do. Whether you work out at home or in a gym, these movements are at the heart of dozens of exercises. So, here's how to do them right. Proper form makes them safe, not to mention more effective. Mix and match the variations to create a routine that works for your fitness level, then change it up as you get fitter. By Kimberly Holden. Pulling. Pulling movements are crucial for everyone, but especially those who sit a lot. That overstretches back muscles and over-tightens chest and core muscles. Do two pulling moves for every one pushing exercise to combat weakness and pain. Learn it. The low row can be done on a cable machine or with exercise bands. Sit tall, leaning back very slightly with your chest proud. Extend your feet and anchor the band around them. Take one band in each hand, choking up or down to create more or less resistance. Exhale to drive your elbows back about 45 degrees. Visualize an upside-down triangle on your back with its base running across your shoulders and its point right where your lower back starts. Squeeze the point as you pull the band back. Level it up. Gorilla row. Take a wide stance with a kettlebell and a foam block or another stabilizer between and slightly in front of your feet. Hinge at your hips as if doing a wide-legged dead lift until you reach the handle of the kettlebell. Stabilize yourself with one hand on the block as you exhale to row the kettlebell up, aiming to pull the weight to your hip bone. Inhale to return the weight to its starting position. Be sure to perform the move equally on both sides. Pushing. These movements use the muscles partnering those that engage in pulling movements. Because these movements have a tendency to become tight or overactive, it's helpful to focus less on working them than on stretching them out. Learn it. Pushing a weight over your head is no joke. A great way to get started is with a kettlebell bridge chest press. Lie with knees bent and feet hip-width apart. Hold a weight in each hand, elbows out to your sides and below your shoulders. Lift your rear end to create a straight line with your body from knees to upper back. Then, straighten your arms so the weights meet over your chest. Bend your elbows to lower yourself again. Level it up. Windmill. Start in a half-kneeling position. Knees a bit wider than hip width. Left foot forward. Hold a dumbbell in your left hand and push it straight overhead toward the ceiling. At the same time, reach your right hand or elbow toward the floor just in front of your right knee, almost as if you were performing a crunch on that side. Pull your left thigh bone back, driving it straight behind you, similar to a hip hinge, and watch the weight as you move to ensure that it is pushing toward the ceiling the whole time. Inhale on the way down and exhale while you engage your glutes to perform to your starting. And exhale while you engage your glutes to return to your starting position. What weight should you use? Start with a weight that feels challenging for the amount of sets and repetitions you're doing. If you can complete all your sets and repetitions without much fatigue, it's probably too light. If you are at home and don't have heavier weights, try adding a pause in the middle of the movement or increasing the tempo to up the difficulty. Squat. With a squat, you need to flex and extend your hips, knees, and ankles while keeping your spine stable. Your trunk can lean forward as your hips shift back and down, but try to avoid letting your chest fall forward and your pelvis turn under. Think about keeping your chest lifted as you sit. Learn it. Sit down and stand back up, literally. Find a chair with a flat seat that you can sit in comfortably with your feet on the floor. Then stand with your feet shoulder width apart or a bit wider depending on what's comfortable for your body and about a foot's length away from the chair. Now, simply sit down and stand back up, making sure your knees follow your toes as you go down. Don't let them fall inward. Level it up. Goblet squat. Put the chair aside and do the same movement without any aid. Try to create at least a 90-degree angle at your knees if you can, and keep your back stable and your chest proud. Add a weight or try a pause at the bottom to fire up even more muscles and solidify your form. Are your knees tracking over your toes? Are you as low as you can go without compensating in your spine? Plank. The queen of core exercises, the plank, strengthens your core muscles by forcing you to employ them to stabilize your body. Since you're using your whole midsection, front and back, it helps prevent back pain. Plus, a plank fires up your glutes. Learn it. Get on your hands and knees, hands or elbows on the mat directly under your shoulders. Then, step 1 foot back at a time until your body is in one long line. To make sure your form is on point, think about pushing the floor away, lifting your ribs to the ceiling, squeezing your glutes under, pulling your hamstrings, but not your rear, to the ceiling, and pushing your heels back. On every inhale, expand your ribs out to the side. And on every exhale, pull your belly button toward your spine. Level up. Side plank. lie on your side, and place your hand or elbow directly under your shoulder. Lift your hips off the floor so you create a long diagonal line. Make an effort not to sink into your shoulder. Use your core to stay up off the floor and avoid rotating your body toward the ceiling or the floor. Stay sideways. Be sure to switch sides and to know that it's normal for one side to feel stronger than the other. Hip hinge. This is a crucial movement for staying strong and pain-free throughout life. It looks as if you're just leaning over, but pay careful attention to where you bend and how stable you're able to keep your back. Learn it. The good morning is the perfect introduction to the hip hinge. Stand with your feet parallel and about hip or shoulder width apart. Keeping your spine stable, inhale as you hinge or bend at the hip, shooting your rear toward the wall behind you until your upper body falls in line with your hips. You should feel a nice stretching sensation in your hamstrings, which are the backs of the thighs. At the bottom, you should feel a nice stretching sensation in your hamstrings at the bottom. Your hamstrings are the backs of the thighs. Exhale as you engage your glutes to return to your original standing position. Level up. This is a great way to add strength training to the hip hinge. Start in the bottom position with a heavy weight in front of you. Fill your belly with air to create tension in your core. Grab the weight and push the floor away as you pull up, engaging your glutes to bring you to a standing position. Return the weight to the floor with the same hip hinge movement. Prevention Magazine, June 2022. Health. Meet your vagus nerve. Here's what this noteworthy nerve does and how you can work it to stay calm, by Lisa McCulhey. 1. Viva the vagus! Despite its low profile, the vagus nerve is incredibly important, controlling many key functions in your body, including digestion and respiration. It's the longest cranial nerve, reaching from your brain down your face into your chest, ending at your abdomen. It actually divides into two nerves, left and right, that send sensory info to your organs, telling them to do their jobs. The vagus's most important function is controlling your parasympathetic nervous system, which covers your heart, gut, and bladder, says Gurdesh S. Betty, MD, a fellow of the American Academy of Neurology. It also controls movements in the back of your throat and voice box, carries taste from the back of your throat and the base of your tongue, and controls the air pressure in your inner ear. 2. When function gets funky. If you faint at the sight of blood, you can blame your vagus nerve in a condition called vasovagal syncope. As you feel stress when you see a bleed or anything that causes extreme anxiety, your vagus nerve becomes overstimulated, causing your blood vessels to dilate and your heart rate and blood pressure dive. Because of this, your brain gets less oxygen and you can suddenly pass out. Fainting itself usually isn't serious, but it could be if you hit your head on the way down. Check with your doctor if you have frequent fainting spells. Diabetes can also damage the nerve, disrupting the start digesting messages the vagus sends to your stomach muscles so they don't push food through your gut and into your intestines. This leads to gastroparesis, or chronic slow stomach emptying. Your doctor can help you manage it along with your diabetes. 3. Reset and relax. Since the vagus nerve plays such an important role in your parasympathetic nervous system, learning simple techniques to stimulate it can help you soothe anxiety, says Dr. Betty. By breathing deeply, cooling your body, humming, gargling, or gently massaging your neck, you can activate the vagus nerve to reverse the fight or flight reaction, producing a feeling of calm and well-being, he says. My diagnosis. Why was I so tired and thirsty all the time? Life can be exhausting, but a dangerous underlying condition makes it so much worse. By Emily Goldman. Have you ever suddenly had to urinate so badly that all the hair on your arms stood up as if there were an electric current humming through your body? This happened to me regularly almost 10 years ago when I was a freshman in college. I must be drinking too much water, I told myself. Most days I'd also wake up feeling as if my mouth were full of cotton balls and my arms and legs weighed an actual ton. I must be under a lot of stress, I thought. I spent over a year figuring out how to survive without letting others know that I was just barely getting by. More questions than answers. I had routine blood work done that spring and got a diagnosis and a prescription that shocked me. You have prediabetes, I was told. I had to start taking metformin, a drug that helps manage the way the body stores glucose. But I was told I was otherwise healthy. After a few days, though, I knew something was wrong. My stomach cramped and anything I ate would go right through me. I decided to stop the medication and saw an endocrinologist and a nutritionist over the next few months. One of the tests I was given came back indicating that I could have type 1 diabetes, but my doctor brushed it off, saying, "That usually happens in little kids. Your numbers aren't that high. You're just pre-diabetic." It just didn't make sense to me, however, and my doctors didn't seem to hear my questions. It felt like shouting into a void. Pre-diabetes usually coincides with other comorbidities and family history, neither of which applied to me. But my doctor sent me home with directions to test my blood sugar once a week, 2 hours after I ate, and to call her office if the number went over 180. She also advised me to cut out carbs completely. I did everything she asked, but I still found myself calling her office just about every week for 3 months, only to be rushed off the phone by different nurses telling me to drink more water. It wasn't until my blood sugar reached over 300 every week that I really started to worry. Finally, getting the right diagnosis. A year after my pre-diabetes diagnosis, I got a call from my doctor's office. The nurse said there had been a misunderstanding. The doctor hadn't realized I'd been calling about consistently high numbers. She said I needed to come in immediately, as I was likely to go into diabetic ketoacidosis, which can ultimately lead to coma and death if untreated. I met my mother at the office, where a repeat of an earlier test showed that I had type 1 diabetes. "This means you'll need insulin for the rest of your life," the endocrinologist told me. I just stared at her, shocked, scared, and sad, but most of all relieved. Finally, someone was taking me seriously. My mom was crying and I was too. We both knew I had a lifelong battle ahead of me. Listeners, I'm going to stop it right there and pick it up on the next go-around so that way we don't run out of time. You have been listening to Pennywise. Excuse me. You have been listening to Prevention on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Tony Morell saying goodbye from Al Radio.